My name is Pete Goddard, and tonight we're going to be talking about risk-taking behavior in adolescence. And just kind of a quick review, yesterday we came up with some of the different words to describe adolescence. And most of the words we came up with were not words that we generally would like to have describing adolescence. You know, it's kind of a period of a lot of turmoil. But also keeping in mind that at least 80% of kids are going to make it through adolescence without any significant kind of problems. Adolescence is going to be a changing period for the family because you've got kids who are no longer little kids and not yet adults. And they are developing physically, emotionally, socially, and what's going on around them. And when a family is able to deal with those changes as they occur, they are more likely to have a smooth adolescent period with their kids. If the family is going to remain very rigid and not change the way they dealt with the kids as they become adolescents, you are going to have some difficulty. So the idea is to keep in mind and to keep the family values the same. Don't change them. But the idea is to use them as your guide as you do make some changes in the way you deal with kids as they become adolescents. Now, something happens then, okay, in adolescence that scares a lot of us. And there's this almost a need in adolescence to take risks. Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but a lot of us also have a need to do some risky things sometimes. But that's not as dangerous for adults because we've got the reasoning ability up here to decide, hang gliding may be a nice thing to do, but for me it's a little bit too risky and instead I'm going to go on a hot air balloon ride kind of stuff. Okay? So you may be able to use some reasoning skills to figure out that there are some things that you want to do that you still consider risky, but are relatively safe. Teenagers don't have that yet, okay? They still have that need there for the risk-taking, but they don't always have the reasoning ability to figure out this is a safe thing, this is not a safe thing to do. And that's why it becomes dangerous. In my impeccable handwriting up here, wrote down some of the needs that are behind this risk-taking stuff in adolescence. Okay. One of them is to develop some sense of mastery or competence. Okay, getting good in something. All right, skateboarding. Okay, practicing that. Playing basketball. Okay, becoming good at something. Okay, power over their environment. Getting some kind of control over what's going on around them. Testing their physical capabilities, okay? Becoming stronger, being more coordinated, and trying out some of these new things that they can do, again, is another reason behind there. Some kind of goal accomplishment. They've got some goals set for themselves. Maybe it's, you know, to make the track team or whatever it might be. And so they're going to be working at that in some different ways. To develop themselves as an individual, as someone that is unique from other people around them. Again, you know, it's kind of the tug of war in teenagers. They so much want to be alike, like other people in appearance and dress at times, and yet they also want to be very different. And so, you know, they may wear the tennis shoes and the Levi jeans or whatever they're wearing nowadays, and yet they may also want to be very much of an individual and shape half their head. So you've got that kind of like dichotomy going on there between that physical intimacy. So much they're looking for some kind of physical intimacy as they're developing, as their sexual feelings are developing. And that also can come into the realm as far as some risky behaviors there. Emotional intimacy. Feeling that kind of emotional closeness to someone is also there. Peer group acceptance, want to be part of the group. And if they're within a peer group where the quote-unquote norm is that you do something, like around us jumping off one of the railroad bridges into the river, okay, which is can be an extremely risky type of thing, you know, people in that those peer groups will do that kind of stuff. Experimenting with a new kind of behavior. You know, it could be, you know, horseback riding, it could be, you know, hang gliding or skydiving or playing a sport. It can be lots of different things. But experimenting with new things they can do. And the appearance of maturity. Wanting, you know, making, you know, looking like they're an adult in some ways. So that's kind of what is behind some of this risk-taking behavior. Now, keep in mind that these are needs of adolescence. It's not necessarily just a want. It's almost like not a physical need, but it is an emotional kind of need that they have. And that, because of it's a need, it will be met in some way. Okay? Just like you're hungry, you know, you're going to find some way. If it's just eating bread for supper, or whatever it might be, you know, you're going to find some way to meet that need. In your mind, what are some of the things that teenagers do that you would classify as risky or risk-taking type of behavior? What are some different things that teenagers do?
Race in their cars.
I'll put drive. Now I'll cover all the things with driving as far as, you know, a whole host of things there. Yeah. What else?
Sex.
Betcha.
Drugs.
Yeah.
Alcohol.
Huh?
When my brothers were 14 years old, they climbed up the railroad water tank where the engines would replenish the water in the tank.
Yep.
And they jumped in the water and swam in the water tank where the locomotives would take on water.
Sounds familiar. Okay, what else? Risky kind of behavior.
Okay. You know, I think there's something about hanging out with dangerous people.
Hanging for the danger.
Okay.
What about ignoring the well-being of your body?
Mm-hmm.
Food habits and both.
Smoking.
Yeah, oh, smoking, yeah.
Oh,
alcohol. Coffee, sugar.
Okay. You've got alcohol up here and drugs. Coffee, okay.
Sugar.
You
didn't
put sugar.
What?
You didn't put sugar.
Please, do I have to put sugar in?
You better put sugar.
But they will over-exercise.
Or dieting.
Dieting, over-exercise.
What about this?
Oh, for looks, you mean?
Yeah, anorexia.
Bulimia, anorexia.
Anorexia, whatever.
Or overeating.
Yep.
What
are
they eating?
Brings them with their grades. Sometimes they go through a stage where they just do just what it takes to get by, even though they're capable of much more. It's just kind of like seeing how far they can go.
Behavior concerning their grades, okay. What else?
Language. I don't know if that's a risk. They use inappropriate language.
How about shoplifting or something?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, break the law.
Toying with the law.
Vandalism.
Okay. There's something I'm noticing about all these up here, okay, about like, you know, driving, racing, driving with someone who's drunk, about sex, drugs, alcohol, coffee, dieting, exercise, shoplifting, law-breaking, vandalism, swimming in the train water tank, hanging out with dangerous people, ignoring your body, smoking, behavior about your grades, not getting as good grades as you could, about bad language.
They're all bad.
Yes! All these are basically, except here, exercise,
yeah,
are basically seen as negative type of risk-taking behavior.
Uh-huh.
Okay, enough negative ones now.
Right.
I don't want to hear any more negative risk-taking behaviors here.
Good.
I want to hear positive, good ones now.
Going out for sports.
Yes.
Going hiking and rock climbing with the dad.
Hiking, climbing.
Rock climbing, yeah.
Being open to strangers.
Say it again?
Being open to different kinds of people.
Yes.
But then young children are told, don't talk to strangers. You don't know who you're talking to.
Now we're getting into adolescence.
We're talking about teenagers.
I beg your
pardon. Okay. What? What's up?
It's taking up a cause.
Yeah.
Saving whales.
Yes.
Yeah.
Belonging to Luther League.
If that exists anymore. But yeah. But
young people's organization and church.
Okay. Or some kind of positive peer group.
Getting a job.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Trying out stuff they haven't tried out before, like being an artist or being a rock musician. Or
okay. How, developing their talents.
Yeah.
Guitar playing.
Yeah.
Just a musician.
What else?
Learning to drive. I always thought that was a big step for me.
What was that?
Learning to drive.
Breaking up with bad people. Dropping your bad friends.
Yeah. Dropping their bad friends.
Or their bad habits.
Well, you start making friends. I don't remember making friends until I was an adult.
Yeah,
making
friends.
Okay.
Making friends from before you're a teenager.
Making new friends.
But you make real friends when you're a teenager.
Okay. Making friends.
Emotional.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
A bond.
Yeah.
Blood brothers.
Blood brothers, huh? Okay.
How about taking a trip?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, the thing to keep in mind is that, you know, right away, you saw how our thinking goes. Now, that's typical. I mean, don't think you're abnormal or anything, because when I mention risk-taking behavior, think of all these dangerous things that teenagers do, because that is typical. But there are also so many positive things also, okay? Now, we already heard one story about what someone did as far as risk-taking behavior. I want you all to close your eyes. I want you to take yourself back. Some won't be too many years. Some will be quite a few years till you're about 15. Give it take a few years here or there. I want you to envision where you were living, the school you went to. Kind of get into your head the people you hung out with. And I want you to identify something that you did or someone that you were close to did that you would consider to be extremely risky and very dangerous. Okay, let's hear from some of you as far as what were some of those things that happened?
Ran for a student body office and had to get up in front of a whole auditorium of your peers and plead your cause.
Okay, and this is you that did it?
Right.
Okay, now.
I lost.
Okay.
But it was a good effort.
All right, describe what that was like, the experience of having to get up in front of all those students.
Most terrifying thing in my whole life.
Okay. What did you have to do to get yourself ready for that?
Whoa. Practiced.
Okay.
Had somebody else read my speech.
All right. Who was that? Do you remember?
mom.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Did you get any words of encouragement from your mom at all?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Why were you able to do it? Why didn't you chicken out?
Once I made the commitment to do it, there were times when I really wanted to back out, but I knew that the embarrassment would be greater if I backed out than if
okay.
I were to.
It would have been a bigger risk mm-hmm. to back out than mm-hmm. to actually go up there and go ahead with it. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. You got up there, you gave your speech, mm-hmm. and then you sat back down. What was that like?
Relief.
Okay. What else?
Well, I didn't think I did that bad.
All right.
I was proud of myself.
Okay. There you go.
It was a stretch. It was truly a stretch.
And yeah.
It was a good one.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, was there some excitement there?
Adrenaline.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A good risk-taking type of behavior, okay, that really works. Okay. All right. What about the rest of you? What are some other things? I want to hear this mumbling back there. What's it?
He just told me stories about his brother. He was in the car when his brother drove 90 miles an hour down the Tacoma Highway.
You put 70, it'll be Tacoma Highway before freeways and stuff, but the
uh-huh.
speed limit was 50.
He had a dead little brother.
He took it out at the time I was thinking.
Okay. Do you remember about how old you were?
Well, I was about 17, I guess, 18. He was 16.
Okay. And so you let your younger brother drive.
I was riding with him.
Uh-huh. All right.
I said, I tried to hold him down, and he went ahead. I said, you're going to go too damn fast.
Yeah. Okay. Now, and it sounded like your brother did lots of these kind of things, or?
But he was more of your daredevil type. Yeah.
Okay. He had different risk-taking needs than you did.
Yeah.
Okay. It's an important thing to remember, because you may have kids that have different risk-taking needs. And so you got to look at dealing with them differently then. Okay. Did he ever get seriously hurt?
No. He never had any pilots that I know of.
Okay. Did he ever come close that you know of?
He still drives boats fast.
All right. Yeah. Okay. What are some other situations?
I can't think of anything. Nothing jumps to mind. That was part of my, I always felt like I wasn't willing to take a risk sometimes. Being very cautious about it.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to be the appearance of maturity. I can remember that, bluffing my way through.
Yeah.
More of, I wouldn't. Driving was a big issue.
Okay.
I thought that.
Yeah. Okay.
I can just add to the driving. I have two daughters, this one and one 3 years older. And I will say this, the day they were 16, their daddy took them down to apply for, they were insistent that they get their beginner's license.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only, up to then, that was the one thing they were insistent upon. And they had to learn with a shift stick, and they passed it the first time. But I guess I'm bragging, but that, I have to admit, that they were very insistent upon. The day they were 16, that was important to
yeah.
them. And they learned to drive.
Okay. And so that act of driving, okay, let's look at some of the needs, okay? As far as mastery, being able to do something there, power over the environment. I mean, you know, hey, you can go a lot faster in a car than you can in a bicycle. Some kind of goal accomplishment, you know, yes, I'm going to get my driver's license. Let's see what else here. Experiment with a new behavior, okay, being able to drive. Yeah, peer group kind of stuff. So there are lots of things there that are going on that really kind of motivate people to take these risks. The I was also a very shy person as far as in growing up through my adolescence. And it wasn't until I moved away from home and worked my first summer at a church camp and washed dishes all summer. I had the best time of my life because I was away from home. And, you know, I had to do my own laundry and, you know, no one was fussing at me for not making up my bed and all this kind of stuff. And at this camp, I got into some very risky type of things. One of them was, my parents knew about and one they didn't. the one they knew about was that someone that was up there had their pilot's license. And they had to have so many hours of flying in. And he would take me with them and let me fly sometimes. You know? And here you go, for a 17-year-old to be able to do this kind of stuff was just unbelievable. It was so much fun, you know. And for me, you know, mastery, being able to actually do it, I didn't ever land or take off. You know, I never got near that. But just, you know, you can't run into trees very easily. When you get me up real high so I wouldn't mess up too bad. But, you know, it's something, a goal I was trying to accomplish there. A new kind of behavior. I mean, appearance of maturity, I flew a plane, you know, kind of stuff. And, you know, it was such a thrill doing that. Met lots of needs for me at that time. Another one that I was involved in that was not safe is that's when I started experimenting with drinking. And at the time, the drinking age was 21, but that was no problem as far as getting other people to, you know, get the alcohol. Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill, I mean, it's like, you know, all this kind of stuff. They would sangria, all this wine or whatever. And, you know, and would go off in the woods and overnight, and I would get drunk. That's where I got drunk for the first time. Also potentially very risky, okay? For me, it was risky because if I got caught, I would have lost my job. And I really liked my job, even though it was washing dishes. You know, I'd get in a lot of trouble at home. Also a lot of, you know, there's a high risk there also. We weren't driving anywhere. There was the potential of us getting very sick and having to work the next day. But it could have started a pattern, and a very negative pattern at the time. And fortunately, every time I drank, I got sick. And it was like, you know,
say Boone's Farm.
I mean, it couldn't have been planned any better. Because that very quickly curbed that risk-taking behavior of mine. Okay? And it probably did it more effectively than if someone, you know, told me I had to stop, because then I've gotten real, you know, you can't tell me to stop this kind of stuff. Fortunately, I was able to figure that out on my own very quickly. It didn't take very long.
Don't you think, though, that something else must have been going on that led you to decide that, gee, this, every time I'm drinking, I'm getting sick. I don't like this feeling of being sick. And this isn't worth it for me to continue. Whereas some kids, if they don't have something right going on, they might decide that, hey, being sick, you know, is worth it because I was drunk and boy, I can brag about it. And that's something, you know, something that I'm going to continue,
right?
And I'm
going
to develop
needs.
That habit, and that I'm going to get real good at this. And
yes.
Somehow.
Also, if you have a teenager that has very low self-esteem, is, you know, possibly depressed, you know, having a lot of problems, the time of being drunk is like self-medication. You know, they can forget about the problems at the time, and that can become a very powerful motivator to continue that kind of behavior.
And that losing their job would kind of boost them and say, well, yeah, I'm not worth that job.
Yeah.
And it potentiates that depression.
Yes.
You're saying like self-sabotage.
Right.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't like this feeling of I have this job and I'm making money and things are going good for me.
Mm-hmm.
Too good.
That I don't think I'm worth things going good for me. You know, mm-hmm. That I should get cut.
Yeah, which can borderline on on suicidal behavior, someone who continues that kind of stuff. The
is that that would hopefully be the abnormal or the I mean the
20%.
Yeah, 20% sounds to me like a boy. That's a lot. A lot that people 20% of people going through adolescence
will have some problems.
Now, what do you mean by problems?
More than what, well, I wish I could, you know, specifically say, well.
80% would just kind of do it on their own, not have to.
It's not going to be easy. Mm-hmm. But it is going to be. Yeah, going to be able to make it through, you know, parents will get a few gray hairs, you know, kind of stuff.
But like 20% might need professional help or counseling or.
Possibly.
Something to.
Yeah, now again, there's only going to be
some kind of, you know, something that
some kind of intervention would really help. Yes, and the earlier that intervention is sought after, the better. Now again, there's only going to be about 5% there that's going to seek any kind of help.
Are they going to seek it, or is the parent?
It most likely the parents, because their behavior is going to get to the point that it's going to be either too embarrassing or painful to the parents, or too worrisome to the parents. There's very few teenagers that I work with that are self-referred, where they tell their parents, I really need to talk to someone, or they'll come to me and say, you know, Pete, you know, can I spend some time talking to you?
Is there something that happens at puberty that is after really, if you've got a good kid and you've done all the right things and done all the right strokes, does that put the odds in my favor?
Yes, most definitely. When there is a family where up to puberty, where things are going basically pretty well, the odds are very much so in your favor that you will make it through adolescence okay.
I'm not going to have this Jekyll and Hyde all of a sudden there.
Now you're going to have a teenager that's really going to confuse you at times, because you all will have that kind of Jekyll and Hyde, whereas previously when you know your child got mad about something, they acted a certain way, and now they may fly off the handle, they may throw something against the wall, and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, kind of stuff. You know, is this just the beginning? You know, what's going on, kind of stuff, and you know, all these fears start coming in. And it's not necessarily the way they are going to be all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be that, you know, they just had a bad day. Or, again, experimenting with new behaviors. When I came home from camp that summer, I experimented with a new behavior, saying the word damn. And in our family, you do not say the word damn or anything else that came anywhere close to it. So, you know, I experimented with this new behavior. And after saying it twice, my mother said, Peter, you do not use that language in this house. I was like, oh, okay, you know. So I tried. But, you know, that process of experimenting with new behaviors, testing those limits. You know, we talked yesterday about limit setting. They're going to be testing those limits. And it's the job of parents to say, you step beyond the limit, you need to back up some. That's the job of the parent to do that kind of stuff. And even though it may freak you out some when, you know, your kid takes up something and throws it against the wall when they're really mad, okay, you just very calmly, again, reestablish what the limits are, and you get them to clean up the mess, and you just kind of go on. Because they will experiment with new kinds of behavior, okay? Risky kind of behavior that adolescents take, you have to watch, because sometimes it may look like it's safe, and it may not always be. I'm working now with a 16-year-old who came to me because of he had gotten his second DWI ticket, and his parents decided that something needed to be done. Of course, they don't see it as their job to do something. They think it, you know, they take him to a counselor and let him, you know, straighten this kid out, which is one of the problems. But, I mean, that was one of the risky behaviors he was involved in. He's involved in a couple others. One of them is water skiing. Now, water skiing can be done very safely. But when he started describing the kind of water skiing he was doing, where he was doing with a slalom, And when you kind of go out to the side and you go way, you can get your body way down low as you're going around, doing it near the edge of the river, the very big river and a lake where they're doing it, going underneath the branches that were only a couple of feet off the water. Extremely dangerous behavior. Okay? Now, to him, he has a very high need for risks. Extremely high. And so he needs to be in some kind of high risk type of behavior that's not as risky as this. We talked with the parents, which would you rather your son doing? You know, kind of stuff. And of course, they make sense and all, so he's going flying on a regular basis now. And we're working at making a closer relationship between the father and the son now, which has also been a problem. Let's see, the other thing we're getting involved in is Outward Bound. Okay? Again, a high risk type of behavior because he's going to be in a setting with new people he doesn't know. That's a very risky thing for teenagers. Just going up to say hello to someone you don't know can be a very high risk behavior for teenagers. And so that's one of the things that he did this summer, okay? Having to say hello to new people, being involved in high risk type of behavior as far as some of the rock climbing they were doing and some of the survival type of stuff they were doing. It was not easy for them. Okay?
Outward Bound.
Outward Bound is a program where even you can go to Outward Bound. They have it for us old people. And where you can go camping, and they'll take you mountain climbing and rappelling with ropes, climbing up the face of the mountain. And they'll get you on, like they call these high ropes course, where you're climbing up high in the air. And they do it in a very safe way. There are trained professionals that do that, so that even though it's very risky, it's also a high degree of safety involved.
Is he willing to accept that? Or is you get the
It took a little bit of doing to get him to go to Outward Bound.
But accept that there's a reasonable way of doing this. There's a risk, but there's a risk.
That doesn't make sense to him yet. That's why he's involved in the dangerous behavior.
Yeah.
What's your strategy?
Well, the first step is in establishing a relationship with this guy, who, when he first came into the office, was sitting out in the waiting room and would not come to my office. Yeah. And so this was the guy that when I'd go out there, I just sat next to him, the same way he did kind of stuff, and talked about what a pain in the butt it is to have your parents drag you to a place like this, And that's where we started our conversation. And then he began to realize that maybe it might be okay to talk to me. And so that's how we started. And it took a lot of work, and it still is taking a lot of work, to be able to maintain a relationship with this guy. Because to him, is one of the most risky things is emotional intimacy. And if he starts talking about his feelings with me, that becomes very scary. And so he's involved in a lot of physical intimacy. He's very sexually active. Okay? But he's got it without the emotional intimacy. So it takes a lot of work to be able to get that kind of relationship going.
How does he get into a lot of sexual intimacy without emotional
intimacy?
How? Use your imagination.
Well,
I would think it would take both.
No, it's.
Where take a bit?
He's an attractive 17-year-old that's on the wrestling team. Again, another risky kind of things he's involved with, and a lot of girls like him.
Big kid around campus.
Right. That's right. He has his choice of girls that would go to bed with him for just a one-night stand and no, that's it kind of stuff. And that's what he does.
So how would Outward Bound get through to him, but we still have to do it our way? Or is that...
There they used some of the peer pressure. Yeah. And the small group they have of maybe 8 to 10 participants and a couple of the leaders is that everyone does what they're going to do. Everyone's going to climb up this cliff, and they have to work together to be able to do it. And although he may hot dog it and get up there himself, you know, he's got everyone else down there. He has to help up then also. And so it becomes a matter of, well, if you don't do this, then we're stuck here at this cliff and we don't have any food with us. The food's up there. You know, so a lot of peer pressure comes in then also.
Now, if a child grows up with emotional intimacy with their folks, then they tend to not have that much problem with emotional intimacy developments through their adolescence.
And also physical intimacy. Okay?
Physical. Yeah.
Yes. Okay? Physical intimacy with, you know, again, you know.
So this guy, although it's very scary for us to even think that our kid might be like that, it has to do with he probably didn't have a lot of emotional and physical intimacy growing
Correct.
Up, and he did not even develop.
That's right. The parents did not establish a lot of physical or emotional intimacy within their family. And so, again, that's a need that this kid has, and he's going to find a way to meet that need. Now, he's not going to write it out on paper and come up with all the different alternatives and then select from them. He's going to do whatever it is that comes into his head at the time and do it. That's it. Because, again, the reasoning skills aren't here yet in his head to be able to go out and make good choices of things that are risky.
But those needs are going to be...
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's what a gang supplies.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So much is the opportunity to take risks and get a lot of those things met all at once.
Yeah. A gang can very much do that.
Potent.
Now, a gang isn't necessarily bad. You know, you came like with Luther League. Luther League, what's Luther League? A gang. Okay? It's a good gang. And although the concept of Luther League has changed over the years, a youth group in a church can be a way of meeting a lot of different risks. My own youth group from church, we're going camping this fall. Actually, we're going in November up on Mount Mitchell, which around us is the highest peak east of the Mississippi. Of course, you know, compared to the mountains around here, it's nothing. It's only about 5,000 feet. I mean, you know, gosh, you know. But it's for us, it's a big mountain. And this is going to be risky because it's going to be winter camping in tents. And already, these kids are coming up to me, and they're saying, we're going to freeze to death. I'm saying, oh, no, we're not. We're going to make it. Okay? So, some of them are kind of scared about this. This is a risky kind of thing to do. But they're really excited about it. They talk about it all the time. Okay? So it's risky, and yet there's a degree of safety. They're not going to freeze to death, I hope. So we have had tents blown down and with people in them. And, you know, we've had a couple other things happen, but it's been a really fun time. But it's also been... it's been a lot of work to be able to make it happen. Okay? Now, you look at, again, preventative kind of things. I forget, who is it that mentioned about, like, you know, rock climbing with your dad or hiking kind of stuff? Okay?
Yeah.
You look at the preventative kind of things. These are the kind of needs your kids are going to be experiencing. Now, you can kind of just sit back as a parent and wait and see what happens. And then, if problems come up, then you got to get to an intervention, which is a lot more difficult to do than prevention, preventing the problems from occurring. How can you prevent your adolescent from getting into the more dangerous risk-taking behaviors? What can you do?
You try to interest them in sports?
Yes.
And participate with them? And
yes. Getting, you know... getting them to go, you know, involve trying out for sports. And again, that can be a very risky thing. And so to gear that to whatever your kid is able to do. And then when they have some kind of a sports activity, whenever you can, and you work hard at this, going and watching. Okay? And supporting that.
Okay, so. But just keeping them busy.
Yeah.
How? Busy is just not enough, though. Raking the leaves and cutting the grass. I'm sorry, that's not risky.
I think they need a special interest.
Or, you know, they like drama or
yeah, that's what I mean, drama, music, or, you know.
Debate.
Yes.
Being the chess team.
Yes.
I mean, whatever their interest is.
Yeah.
And
you have to really gear it towards their interest, otherwise it's not going to be very risky for them, and it's not going to be hold their interest.
They tell me to expose them to as many different things as you can, and that way they usually pick an outside interest that takes a lot of their time.
Yeah.
It worked in our house.
Yeah.
It seems like with our daughter, who's now kind of over the worst of it, but she was really good at some things that we really supported her in, and then the time came where she just turned it all off and did all those scary things.
Okay.
And we felt like we had done a lot of the good things for her.
Yeah.
And yet she still...
Did her interest change?
Well, she'd been really good at acting and done some professional acting.
Uh-huh.
We all worked to help her with, and she kind of dropped out.
Okay. When her interest... Remember now, this is it's a balancing act. And they're trying out new behaviors, and when they tried something, they may go on to a new behavior. And if you're still trying to get them back into this old behavior...
I don't think we tried to get her back into
it. Okay.
Just we didn't like the one she was picking that we knew.
Yeah. Yeah. And that then you get to the point as far as, okay, how much free rein do you give them to do some experimenting? You know, how dangerous do you let things get before you put a stop to it?
So the question is, how do you put a stop to it?
Yeah.
Some things that you can't stop.
Well, it really depends on what's going on.
Well, some of it you have to decide. Is it, they may not be doing it because they really like whatever it is that they want to do. They like it, the fact that you don't approve of it.
Yeah.
So it's more of a who's in control issue.
Yeah.
That's true.
And so sometimes I've had to decide now what is really going on here. You know, why are they reacting?
Uh-huh.
Is it a control issue or is it really what's going, you know?
Yeah.
And that really helps to clarify.
Yeah.
But can you wait long, hold your breath long enough to get through that?
Mm-hmm.
You have to.
Yeah.
Without permanent damage being done. I guess that's what scares me the most.
Yeah, how much drug-taking behavior is going to go on. Now, it's almost guaranteed that teenagers are going, at some point, are going to experiment with drinking. Mm-hmm. I hate to almost say an age appropriate, because it's not appropriate. I mean, you know, it's still not good, but it does go on. You know, alcohol is so prevalent that it's not difficult to get a hold of.
I remember my dad having the graduation party and buying the keg and saying, this is where you're going to drink it, supervised by adults.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys can get as plastered as you want, but you won't be driving. Oh. And they had, that was my brother's graduation, and they had a great time.
Yeah.
And my brother had, new appreciation or something for these adults that they would think that, you know, maybe these kids would like to, you know, party and experiment.
Mm-hmm. And now they can be arrested for doing
there were a lot of kids there, too, that had so much peer pressure, just, you know, that had never wanted to drink at all.
Yeah.
And
you look at the peer pressure that they're they're working
on
now.
Yeah, and then they can say, see, I tried it once and I don't like it, and so there, so leave me alone.
And you see, I don't know what they do in this area, but around us, the graduation parties they're working on, like several counties where there's like a big amusement park, and you know, they call it Project Graduation, where they will rent the amusement park from whenever graduation is until 9 the following morning, all night long. And it may cost the kids like only $5 to get in, and all the rides then are free, and that's their graduation party, is at this amusement park. You know, and they may get 10,000 kids to go there.
Greedy.
Yeah.
Well, what blows me away is prom night. If you don't spend $1,000, you haven't had a good time.
Yeah.
And I kind of, well, or $500, $600.
Well, they have to come in limousines now. That's what we see in Seattle, the big stretch limousines going to Camas.
Well, if you haven't spent at least $500, $600, you haven't had a good time.
Yeah.
This father doing that, now they weren't of legal age for that beer, were they?
I don't know.
No, they were not.
Well, now,
the police did come.
Oh, they did.
And my father and these adults did talk to him about it. And they were allowed to have this party.
Well, now, what is your theory on that?
Well, on one hand, you have people who say, well, you're encouraging kids in illegal behavior. And you have some people say, well, they're going to do it anyway, so it might as well be in a controlled situation.
But that's no excuse.
Well, I'm just saying that's what the two different sides are.
As far as
looking at it.
Yeah.
But my memory growing up is they definitely will do it.
But would your daddy have done it?
No. But out of a group, out of a high school graduation of 600, you're going to have a lot of kids.
When I saw that in my dad, I did not expect that. That was the furthest from what I would expect him to do.
Yeah.
But in that situation, he looked at it, and I have to admire him for that. That was the situation. There was not a. See, now there are parties like this, amusement park.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't that.
Right.
And so the adults looked around and said, "Look, what choice do we have? Do we want our kids driving off somewhere?" And that's what they decided to do.
Yeah. Because you kind of got the idea that kids were going to do it anyway. They were forming some sort of a...
And really, even looking back, too, I don't think that they were encouraging any drinking at all. That was like, oh boy, come on, let's, drink more.
Mm-hmm. Okay, as far as the risk-taking behavior about alcohol, what can you do as parents as a preventative thing to kind of almost take this off the list as something that your teenager is going to continue or is going to consider as risk-taking?
I have a standing rule that if they are ever in a situation where they have been drinking or they are with somebody who's driving a car who mm-hmm. has been drinking, that all they have to do is call, and I have made a solemn promise that I will not lecture, I will not chastise, I will not punish, I will not do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I just will get them safely home.
All right. What are some other things?
We had wine in the house, and we were offered. I would say after 16, when wine was in the house, it was not.
Okay. What can you do with your kids then?
Show them responsible drinking. Show them responsible.
And that's the key, is showing them, okay? Not telling them. Now again, remember, you've got a teenager who is going to be very acutely aware of the difference between what you say and what you do, all right? If you saying that drinking is no good, and if you come home from a hard day and you have a couple of beers, what is your behavior teaching your child?
That it's a good thing to drink when you just want to feel
so,
good.
Yes. So there's a difference between what you're saying and what you're doing. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with coming home from a hard day at work or however you want to define drinking a beer. But make sure you're getting that message in words also across to your kid. There's not a difference between your actions and what you say. Or if you go to a New Year's Eve party and people are getting drunk there, and your child knows about this party and that people get drunk there, and that you're going to the party, in your child's mind, you're condoning this kind of behavior. Mom and dad do it. Maybe they don't do it, but they're going to a party where it's done. Okay? So what can you do about that?
Be honest with them that I'm going to this party and this is once a year, and yes, I do worry about some of the people at the party. I do think that they are drinking too much or
Are you going to drink, Mom?
Well,
are you going to get drunk?
I'm off the hook. I don't drink.
Okay.
So I can show them that.
Yeah.
That was my only risk.
But you got to be prepared for these questions.
It's to say, hey, I'm not.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you don't drink yourself and you don't have it around the house and you don't.
Well, my husband
drinks. You don't necessarily tell them.
I have to, yeah.
It was never in our house.
Mm-hmm.
Never
in
my house. Was it because it was a forbidden fruit or because no one was interested in it?
Just didn't care to do it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But we didn't tell them they couldn't or anything.
Yeah.
But one did and one never did. So, I mean, one wanted to and one didn't. So, you know, it's just one of those things.
Yeah.
But if you were to have said that, made up some story about why you don't drink or something, that would be kind of phony to your kid, and he would say, well, I'm going to show them.
Again, the idea of prevention. You know, again, making this something that you talk about with kids ahead of time. You know, I can remember even at the youngest age, you know, like when my dad was drinking a beer or, you know, someone was over and they're having a glass of wine, whatever. Again, I had a mother who drank very little, if any, at all. And, you know, if I asked my dad for some beer, he let me have some. I was like, oh, no, it's horrible and stuff, you know. And every periodically I'd ask for, you know, ask for a drink of it and he'd let me have it kind of stuff. And so I grew up with the attitude that, you know, well, it was just there. And it wasn't that big of an issue until, again, I was at this camp and with the peer group that I was in. Okay? Yeah. Now, if you look now about what my drinking behavior is, I may have a couple bottles of beer in the refrigerator and they've probably been there for the last 3 months. I use them more in baking than anything else at this point. But, you know, you look at the example that you set. Okay?
How can you do that with drugs?
Okay. Okay, all right, okay, we got about 5 minutes, let's see if we can get drugs and sex real quick. We are going to have a session specifically on sex on Saturday morning.
All right.
Okay. yeah, the teenagers have already been asking about that one, it's like, you know, so anyway, all right, as far as drugs, looking at as far as a family, how you deal with drug-taking behavior within the family. You know, how are drugs used? You know, do you come across and saying, you know, drugs are bad, you know, horrible kind of stuff, and yet when you have a headache, you know, you take a couple of aspirin, or, you know, it may have prescribed medicine. Well, drugs are not bad. There's nothing wrong with drugs. It's us that's wrong when we abuse the drugs. So many of the drugs there are good, and when used properly, keep some of us alive, prolong life, make us feel better when we're sick. Okay? So drugs aren't necessarily bad. You know, these signs that, you know, just say no to drugs. Well, what if someone's diabetic? You say no to insulin? You know, that doesn't make sense. So we need to be a little bit more realistic here then. Okay. These are the drugs that we have in the medicine cabinet. You know, there's aspirin, whatever kind it might be, kind of stuff. And when someone is sick, you know, okay, reading with the kid, the directions on the bottle even. So this is what I said. No, well, I've got a real bad headache. Why don't I take, you know, 4 aspirin instead of 2 aspirin? Good question. Find the answer. If you don't know the answer, go with your kid to find the answer next time you're at the doctor. Ask the doctor, how come we don't take 4 aspirin when we have a really bad headache? Okay, getting the information across to them. Again, if you start with them when they are younger, and again, doing it as an information kind of thing, it can go a long way as far as, you know, what's going on. I see a lot more teenagers nowadays saying, you know, that, you know, no, they're not going to start drinking, you know, they're not going to start smoking, you know, just the dirty, nasty habit, they don't want to do it kind of stuff. And that goes along with pot and also with the drugs more and more. And I think part of that is because, you know, the parents' attitude and some of the education that's been going on. And again, you don't just say, you know, no, absolutely not kind of stuff, end of discussion. You get as much information as you can to them.
But I guess the drug is holding out that, oh, but it makes you feel so good. And I can't give them anything.
If you have, again, these are biggies. If you have a child who is craving physical intimacy or emotional kind of intimacy, or who is in a great deal of any kind of emotional pain, drugs are going to be extremely attractive to them. Again, if you look at the need, okay, and if you then find another way to meet that need, if you take away the drugs and you still have someone who's in a great deal of psychological pain, you can make someone very suicidal very quickly. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's why it's so important to look at what's behind the behavior. What kind of a need is driving this person? Okay? Make any sense?
Yeah, I must admit, I don't know yet just what. Hopefully your child's the type of kid that if he sees drugs going off in the corner, it's no big deal because he's on to something else. And I guess I went through high school that way.
Mm-hmm.
I was busy doing other things. It's the allure out there. Yes. The one time, let's try it once.
Drugs are so much more available to kids at an earlier age now. And that's the scary part.
Well, if on this television advertising, don't abuse drugs, if they would only add to it, most people say, quote, if they would add to that sign, most people say the best years of your life are yet to come. Mm-hmm. And that is true, like romantic and getting married and mm-hmm. having children. That's the best part of their lives, but they don't tell young kids that the best part of your life is yet to come.
And kids may not necessarily believe that because they haven't developed the reasoning capabilities that as adults we have. And we realize that now that, for me, hey, I'm really looking forward to the next few years and the thereafter, how long I'm going to live. Mm-hmm. But a teenager lives more in the here and now. And they don't see that far into the future.
Some of them might take it seriously, though, if you said to them, your best part of your life is yet to come. They might take it seriously. Some of them might, at least.
Yeah.
A lot of them aren't seeing that, though.
What now?
Oh, a lot of them aren't observing that. Yeah. Their own parents, their own families.
Yeah.
Not seeing the best.
Yes. Yeah, and being a teenager, I'm sorry, there's not enough money that I would want to relive my teenage years. people say, it's like that was a hard time for me and my parents. I don't want to go through that again. All right. Okay, we're out of time for tonight. Tonight at 8:30. We're going to have a forum in here. If you've got kids, please bring them.
What age?
Oh, NEA. I don't care. It's like, what the heck? We're going to figure out some stuff. It's going to be kind of winging it tonight. We're going to do some role playing. And it's going to be fun. It's not going to be real serious, heavy kind of stuff. But, just having some fun together as families and doing some role playing about different situations. So that's going to be 8:30. Let's get you out of here so you can get over to Vespers. And if you want to come back, we'll be over here in this room.
Thank you.
Okay, take care now.